and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Volkelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 634, right? I think.
That's right. Yeah. DC KO! Should add a wrestling match bell or something, or a boxing bell or whatever it is out there.
If I'm enthusiastic enough when I edit, maybe I'll think it.
Let's get ready to rumble!
There are two issues that we're going to talk about in depth tonight, but we do need to give you some context for DC KO first, unfortunately, because otherwise none of it's going to make sense to you. Well, none of it makes sense even if you've read.
I was just going to say that. It's such a convoluted, moronic concept by itself. It's like Contest of Champions in a way, except, I don't know, it's made 1,000 times worse because it's not like Darkseid and Games, whatever the hell, the two brothers, the Collector and his brother. It's not them. It's Darkseid, which automatically makes things 1,000 times worse.
Well, especially for Mark.
Yes.
But to save you all, to become the champion that you really need in this dark and trying time, I have subjected myself to 30 issues of this run so far, of this event. The main series, the DC KO Night Fight miniseries, the tie-ins for Titans, Flash, Superman, and Justice League Unlimited, and Aquaman. I've read them all up until one of the issues we're going to be covering tonight, which is Green Lantern Galactic Slam number one, including the DC boss fight thing. So I did it so you don't have to. You're welcome.
You're welcome, America.
So I guess we'll just get into it. We need to be cognizant of some time. So in order for you to understand this, you need to understand why in the heck we're having this DC KO event to begin with. Why are we going into this no holds barred, whatever bullshit that is happening? I can't even speak.
That's been 30 issues of garbage will do to you, Chad.
Yeah. So to understand him, aka Darkseid, I'm reading this straight from DC KO number one. This is the only piece of this I will be reading outright. To understand him, you must understand where what he seeks. Our universe is full of mysterious energies, but since its inception, its two most primal are the twin energies we call Alpha and Omega. Alpha is the energy of creation, wild and explosive. Nearly all planets with life are sources of alpha energy, but not Apocalypse. At Apocalypse's core is an infernal machine, a heart that runs on Omega energy, the energy of conquest, absorption, control. And when Darkseid sought it eons ago, it chose him as its champion and transformed him into the enemy you have fought so many times. From that moment on, he has sought to turn Earth, reality's greatest source of alpha energy, into a new Apocalypse. And so when he formed his new universe, aka the Absolute Universe, he placed a heart of Apocalypse at its primordial Earth's center. All Omega energy in that realm flows into him, making him absolute. Thus, he has become that universe's King Omega, the personification of all its Omega energy, a walking singularity that transforms all around him. That's end of what I'm about to what I just read. So in order to fight the King Omega, we have to get on his power level. The only way to do this is to essentially try and get a universe capable or Earth capable of generating that energy for somebody who can handle that intense of a blast of Omega energy and can handle it to go up against Darkseid. Who is our champion to do so? This brings us to KO. There's more specific stuff about why it's got to be this way, but that's this premise for this. We have to find our ultimate champion, our own King Omega. So in Justice League Unlimited, now what I'm about to get to is strictly the Green Lantern stuff that has happened in this so far. Guy is highly featured, and there are actually a couple of other Lantern appearances, so I will be talking just very briefly about that. Before I do, Mark, the idea of Alpha and the Omega energy. Do you want to talk about that at all? The whole premise behind KO, because you didn't read this piece of what I just told you.
I'm trying to be respectful, but... No, I don't really... It's a stupid, it really is a dumb concept. I mean, no matter how you slice it, it's just another repackaging of, hey, we have to have a champion to fight the enemy's champion. That's all it is. And we all know it's just a convoluted excuse just to have DC be able to have their heroes and square off and fight each other in a way that, in the end, won't mean a damn thing, but it's kind of like DC versus Marvel. It's like you have these matchups that, you know, just so, except fans didn't really get to vote on these, so I guess there is a difference.
Yeah, it's true. I will say it's almost like, you know, those eternal geek battles of who would win in a fight, just given an excuse to tell a story. Well, if geeks like having this argument so much, let's just actually give it to them. I'm sure they'll buy it just so they can argue some more.
Yeah, I suppose there's probably some truth in that.
So there are two sections to KO and moving forward. You have what is happening on Earth, aka mostly the evacuation of planet Earth. Again, there are reasons getting into, like, essentially Darkseid has already won this whole narrative, whatever. It, regardless, Earth has to be evacuated. So you got to see what's happening on Earth and to the inhabitants of Earth as they are being evacuated. And then, of course, you have to focus on the actual fights and who's going up against who. So in Justice League Unlimited, while the Earth is being evacuated, some villains not in the tournament are getting a massive power amp up by Neron for some unknown reasons.
Additionally, hey, a Neron sighting. That's something to write home about.
There you go. Additionally, in Justice League Unlimited, there have been some temporal issues popping up in story, you know, previous issues that have now stabilized those affected, and now they're stuck in our time. So Terrific puts together a team of them because they're expendable for what they're about to do. This team consists of Guy Gardner, Warrior, specifically Leather Jacket, Yellow Ring, and Alan Scott from Kingdom Come. And this has other people like Batman Beyond, Electric Blue Superman, Hook Hand Aquaman, so on and so forth. So Terrific tells them they're essentially remnants, and the theory is that if the League wins in the big fight, they'll just disappear from time. So he's putting together a plan, and they've got to do their own thing while he puts this together. In this, we see Guy go to Ice and try to elope with her. Ice tells him that they're not together, and Guy flies off with his ring, and he's got tears in his eyes. The team then goes to hell via a boom tube to confront Neron to see what the hell he's up to, and they're immediately confronted with demons. Power Girl, who Guy in story calls Boob Window by name out loud, and Guy, both Power Girl and Guy, die holding up off the demons while the rest of the team escapes. And Guy says there's nothing worth going home for anyways, as he dies. This really gets to Batman Beyond, who's never seen violence, and Alan gives him a pep talk only to die later on. So if you're looking for some Guy Gardner warrior appearances, if you're looking for Alan Scott from Kingdom Come, they are in your Justice League Unlimited piece of this. In Titans, however, the Titans are the team chosen to stay behind while most of the regular league goes out into the fighting. Titans are essentially in charge of the evacuation of Earth. Early in that process, we see Jessica Cruz evacuating Rome. But later on, as ships launch out into the universe, we see Starfires heading up guarding all those ships. And they're confronted with Granny Goodness with an army of Apocalyptians. And right before that fight kicks off, the Green Lantern Corps shows up to help back up Starfire and hold off those forces. And that consists of Jessica Cruz, Aya, that Tamaranian Lantern we met, who I forget the name of, and the Lino transforming Lantern. What's his name again?
Narf.
Narf shows up with them as well. Granny falls back, awaiting a signal to attack Earth instead, and they... Starfire, and with the help of the Corps, leads the Earth refugees under Starfire's care to a safe haven on Tamaran with Blackfire. So that is, if you want to see some Corps stuff, that's happening over in Titans. Before I get to the main part, which is going to lead into our coverage tonight, anything about that you want to talk on, or should I just power through this long-winded bullshit?
Well, to give people a break, I'd say, yeah, having an occasional neuron sighting is always interesting. Having I do remember vaguely now remembering the kind of like the solicits for this, that ragtag team of mistakes that were being put together in this. So that kind of reminded me a little, of Convergence a little bit, conceptually. It's like you're taking some. On some level it did. It almost reminded me of when they went to, except they won. As you know, the never told story that was pretty important about Superman and Lois and the Flash and Parallax going back to wipe out the Animonitors to save the entire original multiverse. Though of course it didn't save all of the multiverse, or else we wouldn't have got the now classic Dark Crisis. But it kind of reminded me of that, you know, kind of like this hodgepodge, this ragtag team, except they actually accomplished what they were supposed to do, as opposed to literal cannon fodder. Like, yeah, you guys suck. It's like having an entire team of hyper time John Stewarts. It's like they won't be here for long, so let's enjoy them.
All right, so this brings us to the main KO event in issue 2. The fighters are sent to a world that is a graveyard of elder gods slain by Darkseid. This challenge for this round 2 is for them to find, quote, the most powerful items in your universe. And anyone not holding one of these items by the end of that challenge is then eliminated. They specifically say that one of the mentioned items is power rings, and they show a GL ring and an Indigo ring. There are three other rings there in the background, but you can't see the symbol. One is very clearly colored red, but because of the coloring on the rest of the spread, it's hard to tell what the others are. Lex immediately then makes a beeline for the power rings because his scanner in his suit can detect them, and Supes immediately follows after Lex, trying to not let him be the one who wins this whole thing because he doesn't trust what he would do with all that power. In the middle of all this, because Guy's one of our combatants, he tries for the Speed Force ring but gets knocked out by Harley Quinn, who takes it. Guy then tries later on for the Claw of Horus, but Hawkman gets to it first. Then Guy screams a cuss word and says, "Not again." Then a third time, Guy tries for Blue Beetle's Scarab while everyone is dealing with Wonder Woman, who happens to be wielding Thor's hammer, and Lobo, who has Bane's venom coursing through his system. That's the fun part of all this KO stuff. But for some reason, Jason Todd gets the scarab first. So Guy is thwarted a third time. He's kind of like a punchline throughout this whole thing for some reason. But then we go back to the Lex Superman side where Lex attacks him with kryptonite and cuts off his hand to disable him while flying towards the ring. There's a pile of them seen: orange, indigo, red, yellow, sapphire, and black. But Star Sapphire gets to them first and puts them all on her fingers. Luther lashes out to try and grab them. Star Sapphire gets away with all of them except one, which is the one Luther wanted to begin with, which was the Black Ring, which he then uses to resurrect the Elder Gods and everyone who's died in the tournament so far to be on his side. Superman is about to kick Lex's ass, and just as Guy is finally about to grab an item, which is the Whirligog, the challenge ends and 16 individuals proceed into the next round. Guy is one of them. Star Sapphire is not, so I assume she died somehow at Lex's hands, or he was able to get the rings off her, thus counting as her not qualifying as having one of the items, so she's eliminated. But then we move really quickly into round three, which is fighting each other in the best of three style battle, and everyone who of the 16 who remains is paired up, and they have to fight each other best of three, but they get to choose various forms of themselves from continuity as the rounds progress, which brings us to Guy Gardner versus Jay Garrick.
Pretty good matchup on paper anyway for Guy, to be fair. Mm-hmm. So I'm not overly familiar with Jay Garrick, so I'm not his like the last form. I really have no idea what that is, but it's to be honest, this is a Green Lantern podcast. We really don't care about Jay Garrick's forms anyway, for the most part. So let's try to roll through this. There's like a book ending story with Wally carrying Impulse, who tried to do something stupid because it's Bart, to try to stop Darkseid and all this stuff, and it failed miserably, so he's hurt. And this kind of really reminds me of Joe and Hal from Absolute, because Bart's completely out of it. He's unconscious, and he's being rescued by Wally, who's giving this whole narration about crap that's going on, which I am not going to talk about because I don't care. Some of it chat basically alluded to anyway. Just the idea of how so many of these of our heroes are being replaced by like dark side controlled versions of them, basically, are they being changed into dark side controlled versions of them. So Wally ends up back at the moment where the same day that Wally ends up back at the moment when Barry is supposed to become the Flash to begin with, because it supposedly has some relevance to what's going on. And this is a bookend. We come back to this later on at the end, but this has nothing to do with Guy versus Jay, which I'll jump into. So the Heart of Apocalypse there tells Jay and Guy they're going to have to compete, you know, like Chad said, best two or three, and you're competing a game of power. So you got to give Jay credit here. Jay is being literal. As Guy's ready to just throw down immediately, he's like, hey, remember, all the Heart of Apocalypse said is that we have to play a game. Game of power, technically, but a game. So he's like, hey, let's play a board game, and it's checkers of all things, which the most amusing part of this is that Guy doesn't know how to play checkers. If it was chess, at least he can understand it maybe a little bit more. But checkers is – but it is funny because in a way you could kind of see that with Guy. And Jay starts berating Guy about that. It's like I'm not ready to play a stupid old man game, and you and your Jurassic Society. That was funny. But he kind of crosses the line talking about Wildcat, who apparently is dead too. And Jay throws his helmet at Guy, and then they square off in basically classic Jay versus classic Guy form, and Guy pretty much wipes him out pretty quickly. So that's victory number one.
Do you not want to say how?
Jay's just like kind of like running around him super fast, and then Guy just kind of whacks him, doesn't he?
No, he creates a spinning blade and cuts him in half.
Oh, yeah, he does kind of do. Well, yeah, I guess. It's kind of hard. It's hard to really pick up on that because there's so many J's in that panel. But, yeah, he does get split at the end. But, yeah. But yeah, that's right. Because technically, when you lose, you die, even though you kind of like you get better real quick. So the second battle is between. That's telling you how much I give a shit about this, Chad, by the way. It's between, like, which we don't necessarily realize immediately, but it's Jay being like basically one with the Speed Force versus Red Lantern Guy Gardner, which is kind of cool.
Kingdom Come Jay. Because remember, really? Jay was living lightning in Kingdom Come.
Oh, yeah. I guess, well, see, the font. I was going to say the font kind of alludes to that, too, but that's just the apocalypse, the heart of apocalypse talking. But yes, that. So, and Guy, you know, Guy really does ridiculously poorly against this because Guy is put on the defensive, and the red, as Jay points out, you know, the red ring is really not there for defensive purposes, and Guy pretty much gets blown to atoms, which gave us the classic 1-1 tie. And what version of Jay is this?
I'm not sure. I think it's just classic, like, young Jay, because he's got like his pouches and everything, and his suit is more button up. I'm pretty sure this is Jay from like World War II.
So very early Jay.
Yeah.
Very early, and maybe in his physical prime Jay. So he squares off against Guy Gardner, Warrior, not Yellow Ring. Leather jacket Guy Gardner. This is Voldarian Guy Gardner. And the battle is taking place on, what, Voldar?
Yeah.
So Guy clearly has a ridiculous, ridiculous home field advantage here. And there's also some subplots in this issue with Gorilla Grodd trying to reach out and trying to, like, unbrainwash some of the Justice League members or at the Watchtower, but again, we don't really care about that. But Guy and Jay square off, and you know, Guy basically is a living weapon at this point. He catches the lightning bolt, the thunderbolt that Jay throws at him, and pretty much he gets impaled by his own thunderbolt. And I do like the fact that the whole going back and forth about having respect for your elders, which of course in the beginning Guy is showing no respect for Jay at all, he turns it back on Jay by the fact that since he is like, I am all the Sith and I am all the Jedi. that's kind of what Guy is. I'm all my ancestors wrapped into one. So it's like, have some respect for my ancestors. Jay is down for the count, not entirely dead yet, but he's beaten. Jay just asks Guy to do him a favor, and Guy's like, no mercy, baby. And it's like, I don't need it. So just beat the tar to dark side for me, Warrior. And he's like, you got it, pal. And he kind of shoots this explosive into him and just blows Jay down. And that's really the issue. At the end, you have a moment, again, much like the Joe and Hal stuff from Absolute, where Wally takes the injured Bart over to Iris's house and trying to pretend, hey, Aunt, could you just take care of this guy for a while? Because Barry Allen's in danger. Who cares? But that's actually flash plot lines. But I mean, related to KO, who cares? But that's it.
Yeah. I like this one.
It's again, not bad.
I read all of these. I think this is one of the better ones. I could care less for the actual DC KO stuff in it, in terms of the stuff that we see going on with Gorilla Grodd and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But the actual fight, I liked. To allude to it, I mentioned it at the top of the episode, but as a reminder to those of you listening, the reason people are being cutthroat, the reason people are giving it their all, is because in order to beat Darkseid, it has been decided that somebody has to be capable of wielding the same power, basically fight fire with fire, but it's Omega energy. So we need to find somebody who's capable of handling that and processing it in addition to being the best. So as people are fighting, they're being influenced throughout the fighting by Omega energy. So that's why we keep seeing people like go off the deep end on occasion or be darker than normal. They're slowly being infected as they go through the process with Omega energy. So it's not necessarily evil versions. They're going through the process of, can they handle it? But beyond that, I liked it. Starting off with Checkers, it's daring to spend two or three pages of what should be a knockdown drag-out fight with just putting up with the charade of playing Checkers before getting into the actual fight, for like giving us enough panel space devoted to this to be like, wait, are we actually not going to get a fight?
In a way, I guess we should be glad they chose Checkers over Risk.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty true.
Though Risk might have met the criteria a tad more.
Well, Risk also would have ended, you know, their first round would have ended at 2 a.m. They'd have to come back to the game a week later. Some of the people I've seen play Risk take way too long to play that game. But I liked it. I thought it was good. I thought the choices for which versions of themselves they went with were pretty telling. It was nice to get a Voldarian warrior guy, since we already elsewhere got Guy Warrior from his, well, the first half of his series, essentially. Yeah. So it was good to get two different versions of Guy in this whole thing. It was interesting, too, to see that they chose to focus Guy as much as they did, because I'll get to it here in just a few moments, but we only see Guy one more time. He doesn't end up in the top four.
Yeah, is that really surprising?
No, it's not.
Let's be honest. The mere fact that it's Guy in this tournament and it's not Hal and it's not John. I mean, realistically speaking, I mean, you could try to, if you really want to be a homer and say, well, you know, if it was Kyle, if it was White Lantern Kyle, but as they're doing right now, he'd be White Lantern Kyle for 2 minutes, which I guess it, as long as you could do it for one round and make it count, I guess it would work. But you knew once it was Guy, I mean, it's pretty much on that level. It's like a slam. It's like Throne and Simon or somebody like that. I mean, I was tempted to say Throne and Jessica or Joe, but because of DC editorial, they might actually have a better chance of winning.
All right. So everybody who makes it through their versus matches, like Guy just had with Jay, round three allows the remaining fighters, among whom Guy remains, obviously, since he has beaten Jay, round three allows them to choose someone to be their partner in the next fight. Guy chooses Hal Jordan. Hal and Guy then take on Superman and Shazam. Hal uses a construct, but still equally as effective as the real thing, Black Mercy, on Superman to take him out of the fight briefly. Superman overcomes this. They fight back. Hal and Guy are put on their back foot, and they're struggling to get back to their feet. But just before Billy passes out of the fight, because he's Superman's partner, Billy sends all his power into Superman, thus getting a really cool splash of like a mix-up of their two costumes on Superman. And Guy and Hal are eliminated from the contest. Now, what I told you guys earlier about how Granny Goodness was waiting on an order to attack Earth. Granny Goodness has, in the meantime, started attacking Earth. So occasionally we need to flash back to what's still happening on the planet. People are mostly evacuated, but evacuations are still ongoing. But we need somebody to still protect as best we can on the ground. So that brings us to Green Lantern Galactic Slam number one.
God help us.
Yes. So parademons and such, the army of Apocalypse is coming down. We see Kyle, Superboy, Odyssey, and Silver Scarab on the grounds fighting the parademons. They're doing the best they can. They're not doing good enough. Kyle decides to go white, take them all out. Then a boom tube gets opened up and a parademon tackles Kyle, who has burned himself out. He's not yet learned how to, you know, handle all of this White Lantern power and regenerate it quickly. They go through the boom tube together to end up at the WAW or whatever, the Galactic Wrestling Federation, essentially, that takes place across the multiverse and is broadcast everywhere. This is where we get introduced to Omega Bam Man, who's our hero in this. I don't know our wrestling counterpart. Hulk Hogan is probably who he's at least drawn to look like.
I think he's a little more Hogan, and if he's anything, he's Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage, probably, yes. If you had to combine two.
But he speaks in alien terms and so on and so forth, thinks sort of along the lines of Lobo, though not as extreme. And it's just a one big wrestling match, and Kyle trying to get back to Earth. He can't get back to Earth because we find out that Omega Bam Man's mentor is actually, who we thought was dead, is actually working with the system behind this whole thing being run. And we can't get to Earth because the people, the the mentor that he thought was dead is actually a minion of Darkseid, and it's a whole convoluted mess of BS. You actually, despite all this bullshit, I'm going to say I kind of end up liking Omega Bam Man. He really is true to his word, a good guy, and really helping Kyle out. We see Kyle in a wrestling costume and, you know, so on and so forth, but we end up making it back to Earth.
Going back to his Mexican roots, Kyle.
Yep. We end up getting back to Earth through a bunch of convoluted BS where Omega Bam Man takes on his former mentor, and you know, they apparently they've been jamming the feeds. His former mentor and his minions have been jamming the feeds to Earth, so Earth can't get any communication out. But they end up fighting them and shutting that down, which allows communication. So Ranian ships can come help, and Tamaranian ships, and the Corps comes to help. Omega Men come to Earth, so on and so forth, to help. But according to the rules of this wrestling federation, Green Lanterns aren't supposed to be involved. They don't qualify or whatever. So that gets Omega Bam Man kicked out of it. And he says, you know what? No problem. You know, I've been at the bottom before. I'll get back to the top somehow. But right now it looks like your planet could use my help. And the two of them fly in to help.
Gets stripped of his title.
Yeah, there's really not much here. I just think it's cool to see Kyle's personality because he can't use much of his powers, obviously, here. I do end up liking Omega Bam Man. I just have no ties to wrestling and the stories that are told through wrestling and, you know, turn heels and all that stuff that happens with the drama of it all. This probably reads much better to a wrestling fan.
Barely. It's kind of slop to a large extent, and it's as I alluded to, this is a really weird and not very promising setup for what's going to roll into the Green Lantern when Kyle is going to be leading the book, that we're going to have the continuation of this one way or the other, of him at least teaming up with Omega Bam Man, and then throw an Odyssey who's completely useless. So I don't know about, I mean, this was not a bad Kyle issue to a certain extent, but Kyle was drowned out by all the minutia around him constantly. So I'm very afraid that's what we're going to see happen when Kyle's leading the book. But obviously, I guess either Jeremy does have some kind of affinity towards Kyle, or this is just an excuse so we can use one of his own characters from The Flash again. I guess we'll find out which one's more true.
Yeah, that's true. There was also, and man, I forget about it, so please forgive me, because I'm usually the indie comic book guy, but there was a recent comic series from an indie publisher that was about wrestling, focused on wrestling, and was extremely, extremely popular, sold very, very well. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is attempting to capitalize on that. I think it was called Do a Powerbomb from Image. I finally found it. That was very, very popular. So they might be trying to capitalize on that. I don't know.
Maybe.
Okay. So at the end of those fights where, you know, Guy and Hal are defeated, we have our four final representatives of the championship thus far. We have Superman, Wonder Woman, Joker, Lex. At the end of that issue, we saw that waiting for them, about to attack them, were some of the individuals from the Absolute Universe: Absolute Superman, Absolute Batman, Absolute Wonder Woman, so on and so forth. But World Forger and his ilk stopped time because our four champions are not ready for this fight yet. So they bring back some of their other champions: Black Lightning, Plastic Man, Batwoman, Starf, Sapphire, and basically say, you're about to head off into your own individual fights. I need you to win these fights and collect Omega energy so that I can funnel that into you with my World Forge
tool, and you'll then be powered up and juiced up and ready for this fight. So our four remaining champions are obviously going to go into the fight with the Absolute Universe characters. They're not powerful yet, but we need a little bit more Omega energy than can be produced by our four champions with four fights. We need some more people. So temporarily, Star Sapphire's back in the fray. This is an issue called Boss Battle, which is a weird ass thing where DC teamed up with some people because Plastic Man ends up fighting Sub-Zero. Wonder Woman ends up fighting Red Sonja. Joker ends up fighting Annabelle. Batwoman ends up fighting Vampirella. Star Sapphire ends up going against Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Lex goes up against Samantha Strong, and Superman goes up against Homelander. So, anyways, the entire point of the fight between Star Sapphire and Sabrina the Teenage Witch is not even really a fight. Sabrina wants to help Star Sapphire, but because Sabrina's not fully in control of her magic, she ends up kind of being accidental chaos. There really is no fight between those two. It just sort of ends. And that's how the rest of the team gets the Omega energy to go up against the Absolute characters. And they're flying towards each other in final confrontation, but it's the, you know, page end until KO4. So we see Star Sapphire briefly, but she's just gone yet again. So that basically, KO's not over. Obviously, anybody can come back at any time based on everything we've told you thus far, raise another champion just for temporary so they have a partner or whatever, because the plot needs it. But it seems like, as of now, we are done Lanterns-wise with KO. Guy our temporal remnant of Guy Gardner Warrior and our remnant of Alan Scott from Kingdom Come are both dead and gone. It seems Jessica and them were that we saw earlier, and the rest, the Aya and the others that we saw from the core that were helping Star Sapphire and them. I have read the subsequent issues of Titans, but the contingent that Star Sapphire was in charge of are settling on Gemworld, and we haven't seen the Lantern since, so they're not there. And obviously, Guy is now eliminated from the whole thing as well, because we have our final four champions. So I think Green Lantern-wise, KO's done.
Good.
We could see Kyle, just because last we saw, he was still fighting.
Yeah, but he wasn't really in the tournament, was he?
No.
Okay. So, but you're right. We could take, but you were correct. As an appearance, yes. As a active person. As an active participant or someone who's going to end up, I have the power.
No. No, that's about 30 issues of the entire thing. There are, I think, like four or five more issues that have yet to be published, two that came out today. So I think all in all, there's like eight more issues in this crossover when all parts are said and done. But it's just going to lead into something we saw the solicits for today, which is DC Next Level. So, yeah, the entire point of KO is to get a champion worthy of fighting and capable of defeating Darkseid with his own energy. Except we know we're not going, by the nature of this event, we're not going to see that fight. This event is the buildup for another event. And it's going, when all is said and done, all tie-in issues, is going to be a damn near 40-issue event. Just to get us prepared for the fight to come in whatever the next event is, which we assume is DC Next Level.
Yes.
We had 40 issues to prepare us for a single fight.
Which, let's be honest, if the single fight turns out to be Superman versus Darkseid, if it does turn out, they could throw us a curveball. But if that's what it turns out to be, that's what anybody would have bet the mortgage on to begin with. You would have ended up with when the mere concept of this KO tournament started, and it'd be Superman.
True. Yeah, this is all fairly ridiculous. Like I said, there are some cool moments. So, like, if you are actually interested in KO, here's my recommendation as someone who's read 30 damn issues so far. Pick up the main series, pick up Superman, pick up Justice League Unlimited. If you're still curious for a little bit more, pick up Titans. Otherwise, I think unless you're somebody who's specifically already following Aquaman or Flash or any of the other stuff, then sure, go ahead and go for those. But if you're just interested in the event, KO Main, Superman Unlimited are your three. Titans is fun at times, really good art, I think, but only really matters in terms of what's happening with the evacuation of Earth and the protection of Earth in the meantime. So, but, and like I said, there are cool moments because it's a big event. It's a big fight. You're going to have those cool moments. Like I mentioned, Wonder Woman picking up the artifact that is Thor's hammer in the DC universe, you know, Lobo getting his hands on Bane's venom and juicing up. That looks really cool. Lex Luthor raising the dead with a Black Lantern power ring. Like, that kind of shit looks cool on panel. So in terms of cool moments, great art, DC KO number 2 is probably the best issue of the whole thing because that's that whole chase after the artifacts issue. But I the idea of doing an event to prepare for an event is grating.
Yeah, it's Third Army preparing for Wrath of the First Lantern.
Yeah. Yep. Did anything you want to say about the entire exhaustive stuff we just went over?
No.
I
give you your props for doing the research necessary or summing up your own your own torturous assignment that you chose to put yourself through to read all this shit to start with. But then to try to summarize it, that's I respect that greatly. You took one for the team big time. as soon as I said, when we figure out what we were going to do this week, and I said, hey, we could do the KO stuff. Even without knowing any of how convoluted, I mean, deep down, I kind of knew how convoluted it was going to be, but the main story. But as we crept closer to recording, it was like, I deeply regretted my decision. It's like, I should not have made that one. That escalated quickly.
Nah, it's all good. Like I said, I don't think I wasted my time because there are cool moments. I genuinely do, outside of the stuff I said I didn't care for, I genuinely did like that Guy versus Jay issue. And I was shockingly liking Omega Bam Man by the end of it. Just at personality-wise, I don't care for the whole wrestling thing. And because Kyle was needing some rest and to power up, it was a good moment to focus on his personality. And he also seemed kind of like a wrestling geek because he was kind of talking about, like, if Earth wasn't in danger, I'd be geeking the hell out over the idea of an intergalactic wrestling federation and, you know, so on and so forth. So, like, you know, that was cool. But, every event is going to have cool moments. It's summer popcorn blockbusters. That's what they are. That's essentially what comic book events are. They're meant to draw you in with the cool who versus who and big splash pages and cool power-ups and all the stuff that just gets geeks talking for a week or two until the next issue.
Yeah, I would agree. But man, the only good thing is that the quicker we could get to moving beyond the dark side for now, that would be the best. Let's just move on. We know, unfortunately, if only because the sales are too good, the absolute universe probably isn't going anywhere anytime soon. But at the very least, as far as some impending big event with Darkseid, we already know, you know, Darkseid. At least if we could put that to bed for like a year or two, that would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff. Like, you and I got interested in Superman's early issues with the whole Doomsday becoming the Time Trapper thing. That still plays a big part of the background of this event. I recommend the Superman issues just because Superman's obviously a big part of this, but there's some stuff involving Krypton and the history of Doomsday and that Doomsday was supposed to be, you know, kind of the alpha to... He was designed to be the alpha for Krypton. He was designed by Kryptonians to be the alpha to fight King Omega. There's more to it than that, but that's kind of the synopsis. So there's some sort of retcon and stuff. And like we see Lara and Ursa before they became who they became on Krypton. And, you know, they discover some forbidden knowledge that was stashed away on Krypton at that time or something. So there's definitely cool stuff for throughout it, but not enough to, I think, invest in 40 plus damn issues of this whole thing.
No, I fully 100% agree. But actually, the concept of kind of retroactively of retconning Doomsday's origin, that the whole point of why they were trying to create a being like that was because of the threat of Darkseid, or even if they didn't know it was Darkseid himself, but they knew, almost like, let's say, it was like a prophecy kind of thing. That would actually make sense because of Doomsday's ability to adapt and overcome. Plus, it's still one of the more satisfying moments in comics and the Hunter Prey miniseries when Doomsday just beats the living piss out of Darkseid. That's one of my favorite moments ever. Is he gets blasted with the Omega beams and he just kind of gets right back up, and then he's just dragging Darkseid behind him, and it's like that was very emotionally satisfying. Thank you, Dan Jurgens.
All right, but that is DC KO. Just because I've already invested this much time, I want to see how it ends, but I probably won't read all the tie-in specific issues. I'll check in on the main event. It's supposed to be over, I think, by the end of this month or the beginning of March. So when the event ends, I will let you guys know if there's anything more Green Lantern-wise, but we won't be devoting an episode to it. It'll just be a quick check-in.
Yep, that works.
All right, what's next?
Ever so briefly, what I've seen... last week I saw Return to Silent Hill, which was absolutely horrible, which I knew going in it was going to be horrible. I mean, the reviews, not just the reviews, I think the critics, the audience score was bad. The critic score for horror movies, that's only shocking when it's good. I mean, most of the time they hate horror movies, but it was bad. It was really convoluted. The only thing I found interesting, and I had to go back, I forgot to do it last week, which again tells you all you need to know about how little I cared about the movie, is that I knew the lead actress looked really familiar, and I was like, why does she look familiar? And I went back and I double-checked it actually last night, and she was one of the medical examiners actually in Jigsaw when they did that attempt to restart the Saw franchise with yet another hidden apprentice and telling the two stories back, you know, one with actually John Kramer and one taking place in the present. That she was the really hot medical examiner that had a John Kramer fixation, a Jigsaw fixation. But she hasn't been doing many movies. I'm going to assume she must have had kids and took some time off. But that was about the only thing interesting about that. I assume you watched the Monarch season 2 trailer that dropped.
I saw one of them, but it was a little while ago. So
you did not watch the new one. I knew you were going to do this to me, Chad. I should have prepped you for this. That's all right. Yeah. We will discuss that probably maybe next week. And any thoughts on the Christopher Nolan Lupita Nyong'o being Helen of Troy idea rumor?
No, I don't have any thoughts on that. I'm still curious about the movie. It's just by nature of it, I'm going to be curious. There are things that are going to affect the level of curiosity, but to be honest with you, I like Greek mythology, Greek history, whatever you want to call it. So I like it enough to push past any potential qualms I could have as we get closer to the movie.
I think it's interesting just from the perspective because I can always see both. I try to always see both sides of everything. So obviously, since we discussed this in the movie preview episode, that, and I believe there's pictures of this already, that if you're going in a world when Zendaya can be Athena, then I guess it's not that surprising because you're literally you're doing the Asgardian thing that Marvel decided to do with diversity. Whether it's diversity for diversity's sake, however you want to describe it, that you're taking the actual mythology of what these characters look like and what people assume they look like based on the race of people that worship them, and then you're throwing it all up in the air and say, we really don't care about the source material on that level. Though once you've already kind of established that I guess on one level, I mean, it's not that surprising if you're going to have Zendaya be Athena that you could have Helen of Troy specifically described in a certain physical way. But if you don't like, but again, if you have aversion to that, that's just, if you're being a stickler to, you know, it's just, you know, they're supposed to look like Greeks because that's Greek mythology. That's fine. But I've actually seen some people, which again, this is where you're, again, you have to know, it's like, you have to, know the room. You have to read the room. That there's I've seen a lot of people come out and make it sound like, oh, you know, that face wouldn't launch like 10 ships. And it's like, hey, I know beauty is literally in the eye of the beholder, but I don't think there are many people that would look at Lupita Nyong'o, certainly facially, and say she's not really beautiful. Is she Helen of, does she meet the description of Helen of Troy? Of course she does not. So you can be critical of that aspect of, because you're kind of like, you know, race swapping, gender swapping, and doing things like that again. But to make it sound like, oh, she's not pretty enough to be that, that's when you open the door for, even if you're not really, if you're not legitimately racist, you certainly know by reading the room, you're opening the door for people to come after you by making it sound like they picked, you know, they picked somebody who's, you know, who's hideous to be Helen of Troy. Like personally, and I have no problem saying this, I've said this many a time, I don't think Anne Hathaway is particularly attractive facially, especially when you take her makeup off. I know a lot of people think she's beautiful. I think she's got a nice figure. I think she's very talented. I think she comes across very well. I wouldn't even think, and if I was making a top 20 list of celebrities of certainly going by face, just faces alone, Anne Hathaway wouldn't come close. Some people like Anne Hathaway. If Anne Hathaway was cast as Helen of Troy, I personally would have a problem with that because she wouldn't meet the description either. But at least, that's a different kind of critique. But beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But it's kind of hard to make it sound like, oh, you know, Lupita Nyong'o was not attractive enough to play the character. It's just that it's not technically historically accurate. But they've kind of already established that with some of the other casting that they're doing, that they're setting this up much more, much like Marvel did with Thor, even though, to be perfectly honest, you could get away with it more with Thor because you made that they were aliens. And then you think about it, realistically speaking, the Norsemen, the Vikings probably never interacted with every god to begin with. So if Thor ever was describing him, Heimdall, they would assume Heimdall would look like them, but look like Thor, because why would you not? That's because we all have pictures in our mind. If you're telling me about, you're telling me about your brother, I'm going to assume he's going to look just like you, regardless of whether he could be your stepbrother, he could be your half brother. It doesn't matter. It's just, we all have images based on, we make connections. But,
well, there's also the idea though, that like throughout the ages, what has been considered socially attractive has changed throughout the decade. Like for instance, in round medieval times, bigger women were considered more attractive because being a plump individual meant you were likely wealthy and you could afford to, you know, to pig out essentially and all that stuff.
Yeah. The Rubenesque.
Yeah.
Body type. And it does. I know it's weird because, like, again, I understand the historical accuracy aspect and saying that this you know, this character is written this way. It's always been portrayed this way. The same. And that's a legitimate argument. That's a legitimate argument. When you start getting petty, because then it makes you wonder. So we're going back to, this is one of the reasons I wanted to talk about the monarch thing. But the fact that, you know, if Christopher Nolan cast Anna Sue as Helen of Troy, another gorgeous woman, would there have been pushback? Yeah, there would be pushback, but would there be as much pushback, or to be a different? I don't know. And the point is, you open yourself up for that. Once you start getting personal and taking shots, all you have to say is, which I saw some people do, which was smart. And this is probably how they really feel. They're not walking on eggshells, but it's smart either way. That she's a very attractive woman, but she's not Helen of Troy, and she doesn't meet the description of who Helen of Troy is. And that would be fair. Now, sometimes it just makes you wonder if people do these things from a casting perspective, just because you're going to get some pushback, and then you can just say anybody, kind of like anybody who criticizes, say, if you don't like this, you're a racist. Or if for some reason the movie underachieves and they have a built-in excuse for why. Now, Christopher Nolan probably wouldn't do it for that reason, because his movies are fairly successful no matter what. But it's just, it is odd. It is kind of a very, because that's going to be controversial. So are you doing it because you really think that's the best casting choice? Are you doing it because, yeah, you know, it's going to be controversial, but at least people will be talking about my movie. So who knows? But that's all I got. Other than, like I said, we'll talk about the full trailer for Monarch once you watch it.
Yeah. I, my you know, very quick tangent. My iPhone has been losing battery power quicker than I'd like, so I went through a few things to try and help improve battery life, and one of those things is addressing your notifications and how often you receive pop-up notifications on your phone. So plus I've wanted to try and wean myself a little bit off of social media. I think it's I still need to be on it for XYZ reasons, but I think I'm on it a little too much. So bundling all the notifications into a summary at the beginning of the day and a summary at the end of the day, as opposed to letting them light up my screen throughout the day, is helping. So I think normally something like the new Monarch trailer dropping would have popped up somewhere in a feed, you know, a notification. But because I have things set on my phone very recently the way I do, I didn't get any notifications or hear about it today.
It would, yeah, I believe it dropped yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah. I started this last weekend, so.
Yeah, I'm just saying, it dropped yesterday because I was watching, and it's interesting because I was watching some reaction videos, but there haven't been many. Now, per capita, this is not, I don't know if it's because it's under the radar. I don't know if it's because it's just not that popular show, because not that many people have Apple TV per capita. But the reality is I'm actually surprised by how many big time channels that I would be expecting to have a trailer reaction that haven't had one, at least up till now. They probably will, but as of now. So maybe people were waiting on other stuff and it just kind of like snuck through. But that's all I got.
And by next time we record, I think we might have some news to talk about, because we have, I don't know if you noticed, I don't know how closely an eye you keep on it, but the payment for Jessica Cruz drafted from my account the other day.
No, I did not. I did not. Well, I wouldn't, because since I paid with PayPal, I would not, as we speak, I'm going in. I would, yeah, they would not give you a notification if something that you had already set.
Oh, I didn't get a notification. I just checked. I was just checking my balance and keeping an eye on things.
February 1st authorization. So yep. that obviously means it's going to be shipping soon. Yep. Which
so
makes
we might
sense.
Have it in hands by the time we next time we record. But maybe
that's true.
You
know, that's possible.
Yeah. All right. What else we got? That it?
That's it.
All right. Well, if people want to reach out to us, what do they do?
Lanterncast.com. The email is lanterncast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook. Use hashtag GLcast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.